Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another edition of News You Can Use. I'm Ann Baldwin, and I'm so excited to have one of my favorite people back in the house, Daryl McGraw. Man, it's good to see you again.
Yeah, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing good. It's just so great to have you back here, Daryl. I mean, your list of accomplishments, I think you were first on the show when we did it with The Connection maybe 3-4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And look what you've accomplished since then. I mean, you're a certified addiction counselor, right? Mm-hmm. You are a recovery support specialist, a criminal justice professional. You've held so many different positions, and we'll get into that and talk more about that. And you're telling me that today, before you came into the studio, you were in prison.
Yeah, I was in prison. They let me out, though. It was cool.
this time.
Yeah, they let me out. Yeah.
This time. But that hasn't always been the case. And we're going to dig into your background a little bit, Daryl. I saw your post on social media. And what did you say about this guy that you just met with in prison?
So, just met him today. And it was really cool. He's been in and out of prison since he was a teenager, a little kid, and he's in his 50s now. And he told me that he has never been out longer than 6 months. And wow. So I reached out to everyone that I know on social media, and I said, we're going to change that. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to apply every resource, every friend that I have, whatever he needs, we're going to support him. I want to celebrate with everybody, you know, you, me, everybody, when he gets that 1 year, that 365 days out. And more, you know, all my friends, as I told them, all my friends that have been formerly incarcerated are all successful and taxpayers now. So that's the goal.
So why this guy?
Hey, you know, I never know, you know, I'm a firm believer in God. So whoever God sends me, and it was just through somebody who knew my story, knew my journey, said, hey, I got a guy that, you know, I get it all the time. I got a guy that whatever.
Need your help.
And so I was like, yeah, I'll go meet him. So he's been in prison and he's been struggling and he's got no place to go when he gets out.
Yep.
So I said, hey, you know, and I made a few calls on the way here before I came to see you. And we think we got a nice little reentry plan, because we'll jump right into it, right? America locks up more people than any other country in the world, right? We have more people in any other country than any other country in the world. We have more people incarcerated. Connecticut is following the rules, right, and locking people up. But one thing that we don't do well is reentry. We don't have a plan for reentry, and as taxpayers, we should be concerned about that, because a person goes to prison, we want to make sure that when they come out, we're thinking they're going to be rehabilitated and they're going to have resources, but that's the furthest from the truth.
Because you're starting from scratch.
Exactly. And most of the times, you know, as you know, I've been in and out of prison 10 years of my life, right? On what I call the installment plan. I'd go in for a few months and come back and make sure the food is still gross, and right? And it was, right?
You didn't go for the food, the bed, and the television?
No, it wasn't. No. And plus, I don't like dressing like everyone, right?
You're a sharp dresser, obviously.
Thank you. Yeah, that. Prison made me want to be a better dresser.
Well, talk a little bit about your past. I mean, it was substance abuse, right, that landed you in jail. Did you get the help that you needed in prison, though, to figure that out?
I wish I did. There were some programs, but they were like, you know, kind of surface level. If we're talking like from a school perspective, they're like one-on-one, right? They just scratched the surface, but we didn't really get into the in-depth reasons of why I was using substances. And I struggled for 10 years of my life, like I said, in and out of corrections. But I used substances for probably 25 years, hustling, selling drugs, using drugs in the street, in and out of the street, and really not, couldn't figure out why, what was going on. I couldn't get it together. I couldn't put any clean time together. I couldn't, and I struggled for a long time. So it wasn't until I was able, the last time I was incarcerated.
Which was when?
May 7, 2007, right? So I went back to prison May 7, 2007, and I went for a violation of probation and quote marks in the air, right? Assault on police officer. But really, I got pulled over DWB, driving while black, right? And the officer pulled me over. One thing led to another. He said he pulled me over because I was on my cell phone, but I really wasn't. And then it was just a really bad night for me. And I remember being choked and tased by the officer, and you know, which led to me violating my probation, and I ended up with a 4-year sentence.
Wow! On top of all that.
On top of all that, you know, but it changed my life. Like I'm not condoning the behavior or the situation. I also had a nickel in that dime. You know, I put myself in that situation. I was out at night. I should have been home, and I wasn't. And I got pulled over, and things escalated from there. They didn't have to go that route, but they did. In that process, I was allowed to change. I figured out a way to change my life. I got tired of the in and out of prison, the, you know, having to always look over my shoulder. And so what I did was I wrote a 5-year plan, which today I call my recovery plan for reentry. And I wrote it for myself, but I've been able to use it with many different people after, since I've been home.
Well, and you're just such an inspiration that it's led to even your business success, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's one thing to be vocal about it, and then people gravitate towards you. They want your help. That can be a good thing. But I also find sometimes, as a person in recovery, and by the way, this month is my 15th anniversary.
Oh, man. Yes.
I know. Yes, 15 yes, years, right? 15. Daryl. Yeah, I'm so grateful for that.
I just had 15. I think I'm 1 year older than you.
You're 1 year older. One year more sober than I am.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So it's interesting, but sometimes, you know, and I've helped a lot of people because that's what I want to do, but there's just some people that kind of drag you down, can drag you back under, and you really got to be cautious, right?
Right.
Because I want to do what you did. Well, you can do what I did, but there's a lot of hard work and a lot of things that go into that. It's just not that easy. Mm-hmm. Now, thankfully, I never went to jail. I never had any of those things. I didn't lose everything like a lot of people do when it comes to substance abuse.
Yeah.
I can't imagine, you know, sitting in a jail cell, coming out, no home, no car, no family. Mm-hmm. You got to change your friends. I mean, all these different behaviors and situations that you've got to change to stay on the right path. Mm-hmm. Boy, I really applaud what you're doing. So how have you applied that? You've been doing work with the state. Mm-hmm. Tell us about what you've been up to.
So yeah, when I, you know, there was these gaps in the system, right? And I realized that, you know, there wasn't a reentry plan for me. And, you know, I've had some very fortunate opportunities. And one of the things that I'm most proudest of is that through a bunch of bumps and, you know, bruises, I started an organization called Formerly Inc., which is Connecticut's first criminal justice reform organization fully staffed by people like me, formerly incarcerated people. And it really started off like doing consulting and technical assistance and helping organizations understand what people like me returning back to the community need. And that just really took off. And that really, you know, people, you know, were getting you know, requests for to help organizations with their transition programs, but also, like this gentleman today, helping individuals transition and possibly connecting with family members, too, who had questions about, you know, their loved ones that may have been impacted by the criminal justice system. So fully anything that we could do to assist people's transition and or creating a bridge from the correctional system to the community, that's what we were there for. Through that, I met a lot of people. And people, some job offers came along, and one of them that, you know, I was pretty happy, but one of them came along that was the offer to, there was an opportunity to become the director of diversity, equity, and inclusion for the State of Connecticut Public Defender's Office.
Amazing.
And, you know, and I've worked at Yale University. I've done a ton of different things, done a TED Talk, right?
Yeah.
Got to do some really cool stuff, but, I mean, if you told me 10, 15 years ago that I'd be working in the public defender's office, I would still be laughing. But here's an opportunity. We talk about the system. There's a lot of people on social media that talk about what's wrong with the world. But here's an opportunity for me to impact the system from the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And not just for the impacted people, but for the people that work with the system. So I have an opportunity to explain to lawyers what it's like to sit in a jail cell, what it's like to lose your freedom, what it's like to miss your family. You know, even if it's as simple as things as, I have court today, I know I'm not getting out, but please let me go upstairs and see my family for that 3 minutes that I'm standing in front of the judge, and that you see people turn around and say, I love you, or what have you. That's so important to people.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've never experienced losing your freedom, you would not know how important that those little 3 minutes were. So I instill that, and I do that. And there's so many other things in community engagement and really getting attorneys who may not have grew up in the inner city to understand the communities that people, how can you defend someone if you don't know where they're from?
Yeah.
So really getting them out in the community, doing community service. So getting people, you know, that work in the system to understand the communities, because a lot of times it's not about crime. It's more about survival.
Right.
Right. So people aren't just breaking the law. Some of them are just trying to survive.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sure there's still some scars. You have a scar down the mm-hmm. side of your eye. What's mm-hmm. that from?
Oh man, I was shaving, right? And
that's boring. Yeah, that's not true.
No, that's not true. The all the scars I have on my face, which I have multiple ones, all came from fights. Or, you know, one of the scar that you're talking about, a guy when I was in the street hit me in the face with a .45 and it cut my face open.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so he was trying to rob me. He was robbing me, and you know, and by the grace of God, I'm here to sit here to tell you about it. But it was an unfortunate situation. And, you know, I remember my poor mom, right? There's always a mom connected to mm-hmm. these stories, right? My mom would be like, you know, why do they keep hitting you in your face? Like, you know, can't they hit you anywhere else? And I'm like, Mom, I don't know, man, you know. But, it was, you know, there was a life that I was living, so I understood.
It was part of the deal, right? Part of the danger.
Like with anything else, right? Yeah. You know, that came with it.
So you have kids.
I do.
So what happened when you were incarcerated? Did they come see you? Talk a little bit about your family dynamic.
Sure. I appreciate the question, because kids and family are so important, especially when someone's on the inside. And we're starting to see systems recognize the importance of family more. But so I had three kids. I have three kids, two girls and a boy in the middle. And, you know, their mom and my mom, you know, made sure that I stayed connected, whether it was through pictures or visits when they could. And, you know, the visits, a lot of people don't understand. A lot of people don't do visits because there's a lot of trauma that's even within the system.
Yep.
We don't talk enough about trauma. You know, so I could be in a visit, right? Visiting, holding hands, talking about, like, you know, you better be good. What's going on with school? How's sports? But the second the visit's over, I'm brought into the back room and I'm strip searched, right? And not only
every time.
So not only are they physically taking your clothes off and strip searching you, but that feeling, that dignity, that dad feeling was taken.
Oh my God.
Drops to the floor as well. And so a lot of people don't do visits, but for me, I was very fortunate, and I struggled. I went through that.
Your poor kids. You know, your poor kid, the poor kids of these people. I went to visit a friend of mine who was incarcerated for multiple DUIs, and I'd never done that before. I'd been in a prison and spoken to a group, but never with a visit. And it is intimidating, the metal detectors and just the militant behavior of, you know, the COs that are there and the officers doing their job. Mm-hmm. Okay, they don't know me. Mm-hmm. But boy, I just left there feeling like I need a shower.
Yeah.
Now, how are your kids now?
Oh, my, which is cool, right? I really appreciate it. I always love talking to you, right? So first time I went to prison, I was 19. So my son is 19 now, and he is in Mitchell College.
Nice.
Right? And he's got a little job, and he's doing good. He got a car that he were working on, trying to get it on the road. My oldest has her own apartment, and she's got a really cool dog named Roxy. And then my youngest is in the 12th grade, and she's about to graduate. So you talk about breaking cycles, right? You talk about, due to some decisions that I made in that five-year plan, and the decision to join this recovery journey has changed not only my life, but the life of my kids as well.
Thank God.
And right? So, yeah, I'm super excited. It's funny that you asked, because my son was texting me something today. He says, "Hey, Dad, do you have any envelopes?" And I was like, "Yeah, why?" In my office. You got to ask these kids today.
Yeah.
He said, "No, I want to get my savings right. I want to try to break up my savings." And I guess he's got some kind of plan. And I said, "You know, I do have some." And I said, "You know what? I don't tell you this enough, but I'm proud of you."
Wow.
You know, growing up, no one ever told me that they were proud of me. You know, now I believe my parents and my family were proud of me, but no one said they were proud of me.
Or I love you.
Or I love you, 100%. You know, I take that back. You know, one time I was on the street and I was running this corner and it was 2 o'clock in the morning and my uncles and cousins had came up from down south and they were walking up and they were like in these suits and shoes, right? Because they're country old men, right?
Yeah.
And they were dressed like gangsters. And my cousin said, "This is your nephew's corner." And, you know, and I was like, "Yeah, you want a beer? You want something? Just go in there." We had these after hours and prostitution and all kinds of gambling, all kinds of chaos, right? And I'm 17. And my uncle said to me, "I'm proud of you." Instead of telling me, "Get my butt home," yep. He was like, "I'm proud of you." So that was the one time that
Why would he be proud of you when you're doing that?
I don't know. I guess growing up in that environment, you know, I grew up with hustlers and, you know, yeah. So
he thought you were doing well, but now yeah. Look at you now.
Yeah.
Is that uncle still around?
He is not. He passed away. God
bless him. But if he could see you now?
If he could see me now, I wish that, you know, my dad only knew me as a hustler and a person that was in and out of prison, and he passed before I made this transition. But my mom, who's still around, and she's very fortunate to see me, you know, do a lot of really cool stuff. She always critiques me, though. You know how moms are?
I'm yeah, like, "Mom, yeah, oh, yeah.
I just met the president." She's like, "You know, you say too much." Well, I'm like, "Mom."
It'll be interesting to see what she says about this show. Because,
I
know
yeah.
We all have those words that we say all the time. It's just a habit. What can you say? And you're a foodie. You love your food, Daryl McGraw.
Oh, my God.
How do you stay so fit and lean?
I don't know. I don't appreciate that. You know, I got really good clothes. but I was thinking that, you know, a lot of times people ask me about the food, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I had a professor ask me, he says, I have foodies, and if the foodies are listening, follow me, right? But don't follow me if you're a vegan, because I don't.
Yeah, I know. There's none of that.
Right? If you're on a diet, don't follow me. But people say to me all the time, "Why do you take pictures of your food?" And I was like, because food is freedom, right? Food is freedom. I've been in places, prison, where they give you what they want to give you, mm-hmm. the portion control. Like right now, I'm very fortunate, right? To if I go into a place and I can't make my mind up whether I want fish or chicken, I get them both, right?
Yeah.
And what a blessing to be able to do it. But it's the freedom. It's not really about the luxury. There is that, but it's the freedom of being able to get what you want when you want it.
And unless you've lost that freedom, you've been in a situation right. where you don't have
right.
any choices.
Right.
You know, your life is controlled by everybody around
right.
you.
Right.
Then you don't appreciate that.
Yeah.
Where can people follow you? What's the best social media? I know you're all over the place.
Oh,
I'll
man.
Let you tell them.
Yeah, they can follow me on LinkedIn as Daryl McGraw. I'm on IG, Instagram at Harriet Tubman 18. Harry Tubman. 18, that's Instagram, Harry Tubman, not Harriet, Harry Tubman at 18. And on Facebook is Daryl McGraw, you know, and if they follow you, they could just look at our friend
that's
list.
That's right. We are friends. We've been
Absolutely.
Friends for a long time.
For a long time.
You're also now on the board at The Connection, which is
yes.
a great organization, and
mm-hmm.
and they saw you and said, "What a perfect fit." How's that going?
It's amazing. And, you know, the story about The Connection is that when the first time I was in prison, you know, when I was transitioning out, I went to a halfway house, and The Connection ran it.
Uh-huh.
And there was a lady named Edie there, and she was amazing, and we, Mama Edie, right? And she was really cool, and so that was my first transition. I wish I had learned my lesson, but I had to take a couple more trips through. But there were some values that were instilled in me at that Connection house. We were like a family.
Yep.
And here now, life comes full circle. I get to be on the board and I get to talk about my experience there and how The Connection can continue to create these experiences, these positive experiences for people transitioning out.
You know, they've always said this, that, you know, even when I help people, sometimes they go back out.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a seed. If you can plant that seed mm-hmm. or a couple seeds, then it takes a couple times sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I recently had a friend call me, didn't know that she was struggling with alcohol. And, you know, she's driving home drunk. She hasn't gotten the DUI. She hasn't gotten herself in any legal trouble yet. Mm. And that's what I told her. She goes, "I don't even remember how I got home last night."
Mm.
And I said, "You're in a situation right now, and you're in a position where you need to fix it."
Right.
Now, I've been planting seeds with this individual over the course of many years, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But now I'm just so happy to say, she keeps reporting to me, it's been about 2.5 weeks that she's been sober.
Yeah.
And so, wow, you know, you plant that seed with somebody, and all you can do is just bless them and hope that they continue on the right path. Now, fast forward to another friend of mine who worked here with me for a while, who I gave a place to live, who I gave a job, who I took to the meetings with me, who I really had hope that this person was going to make it. Back in jail probably now for 3 to 6 years, driving under suspension, driving without a license, driving possession charges, resisting charges, you know, threw it all away. Now, that's a person I had to let go of, Daryl, because I tried and tried and tried, and he lied and lied and lied. So if you're not going to be honest with me, don't ask for my help. That's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, we do have to meet people where they're at, right? And we do have to understand that. But we also, especially as people in recovery, have to be very careful of how we're helping people, right? I'm not like, this recovery is intimate. It's an intimate relationship,
yes, it
right?
is.
It's really special. It's something that you have to like take care of like a baby. So you have to hold on to that, and you can't let anybody jeopardize it, right? So people have to understand. So I'm willing to help people, but I'm not going to go into the crack house and test my strength. Seeing, you know, I'm not going to do that. But if I'll meet you outside of the crack house and we can try to get you treatment. And, you know, I have friends all over the state and all over the country that when somebody needs help, if I make that call, usually we can get them. We can get them somewhere. But I always make the disclaimer: Are you really? Are you ready? Because I don't want to take a bet from somebody that really, really is ready, right? And we know there's this thing called a window of time, right? So you gotta, you know, that window sometimes is small, sometimes it's big, and we need to move on it. But then there's other times that people are just not ready. And when they're not ready, they're not ready. The one thing that I know for sure is when you're ready, you're ready. I knew that the day that I said I was I was done.
But
was
you
done.
Have to say it, and you have to believe it.
Yeah, yeah, and you have to commit to it.
Yes.
I mean, I ran the streets really hard to get my drug of choice. So you have to run just as hard to keep this recovery.
Yeah.
You have to run just as hard, like, to, and you have to network. Right, I always say my network is my net worth, right?
And you don't want to jeopardize those relationships with people who don't understand it, who say, yes, we can help you, but then they see a person fail. That happens sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
People relapse. They go back out. But it's just managing that continuous cycle and getting the people and the resources. So we've got just a few minutes left. In the time that you've been doing this and giving back, Daryl McGraw,
yes.
How many people have you helped and where are they now?
Oh, I don't even know. The number's crazy.
Is
the number's
it?
Crazy. I can't even put a number on it because you never know. You know, one of the things about helping people is I have people walk up to me and said something you said, or I heard you speak in prison, or I heard you speak at a meeting. I had somebody call me and said, I heard you speak in 2016 and it never left me. Even this job, you know, that I work at now, people are like, I can't believe you were the guy that said blah, 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 blah. And I was like, wow, you were there? So you never know. So I always try to be on my best behavior. You might not catch me. You might catch me slipping sometimes. But I try to be on my best behavior because that's the rent that we pay on this earth, right? It's helping other people.
And that is going to be your continuing mission?
Absolutely. I'm trying to keep my rent. I'm trying not to get evicted.
So chances are there's probably, I know there is, somebody out there listening to this program, Daryl, who, if it's not them, it's someone they know that needs the help. What advice do you have for people that substance abuse, addiction, you know, legal issues. Is there a resource for those folks?
Yeah, I think that, well, you know what? Reach out to me. I'm easy to find.
Be careful what you wish for.
Hey, reach out.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, that's what we do. This is what we do. But the other thing is that don't give up on people, right? We can't give up on individuals. We gotta, you know, sometimes you gotta help them from afar.
Yep.
But you just want to be able to support them. I mean, because if people gave up on me, I mean, thank God for second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth chances, right? I wouldn't be here. But just, you know, finding out what those individuals need. And sometimes we it's small steps of just giving somebody, you know, some food.
Right.
Or a nice, kind word. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's interesting because if people had given up on me, I wouldn't be here today.
I know.
You know, I was dying. I had the opportunity to go to a rehab, to figure it out. Have there been bumps in the road? Absolutely. I'm not going to lie. Have there been temptations? Absolutely. But here I am now, 15 years this month.
Absolutely.
Clean and sober. So talk about putting some time together and talk about such a wonderful life. It can happen to anybody. You know, was I drunk on the news? No. But was I an alcoholic? Am I an alcoholic? Absolutely, yes.
Right, right.
So to put our faces and voices out there, as we've done in the past, all we can do is hope that this helps somebody, right, Daryl?
Oh, no, 100%. I'm hoping that, you know, that's the goal, right? That little throwing that pebble in the water and it ripples out, mm-hmm. you know. And for those moms that are out there who have kids that are struggling, hopefully that, you know, like my mom, she stuck it out. She stuck it out.
Don't give up. Don't give up on these people because it's a disease. Mm-hmm. It's a situation that they're in. And if you can just get them to say they're ready, mm-hmm. that's the opportunity to mm-hmm. change their life. So Daryl McGraw, D-A-R-Y-L, mm-hmm. and it's M little C, big G, R-A-W. Look him up on Facebook. All right, let's get your other handles right.
Yeah, Harry Tubman, HARRYTUBMAN 18 at Instagram. Let's go. I need more followers. Look up that TED Talk, Urban Trauma, Trauma Unchecked. It's trauma untreated, man. Look up that TED Talk on YouTube.
It's wonderful.
Yeah,
it's so inspirational.
You got to check that out. I need more followers. Come on, man. Let's go.
Let's go. Let's do this. Daryl McGraw, I got to tell you, you have put the biggest smile on my face.
Oh, man.
What better way to celebrate my anniversary than with someone like you? And, you know, keep up the good work. You're changing lives one at a time. You're changing the world one life at a time. And that's what it's all about. So thank you, my friend.
You make it easy. You're super easy on the eyes. So I love coming here.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. And, of course, we couldn't do this with all of you. We want to thank you for tuning in to this edition of News You Can Use right here on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Hey y'all, Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.